Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. This is our coverage of the Slow Food Nations 2018 Festival. My name is Kat Johnson. And before we get started with our next guest, I wanted to quickly thank our sponsors for making our coverage of the festival possible. Hearst Ranch Beef, the Julia Child Foundation, and Julie Schaefer. Right now, I'm super excited to be joined by Chef Massimo Batura. He is the 3 Michelin-starred chef of Osteria Francescana. And he's here doing many, many events this weekend. I think they have a full schedule for you, Massimo.
Yeah, they did. Hi, everyone.
So, Massimo, can you just start off by telling us kind of what you're involved with this weekend at the festival?
I'm sorry?
What are the events you're doing this weekend at the festival?
I'm here, there, and everywhere, you know. I'm with the booth at the Medici with my balsamic vinegar. I just finished signing the books on Bread is Gold. And this afternoon I will be at the talk for Wasted, like the movie that Anthony Bourdain did. And tonight at the dinner, the chefs, they're going to set up with Impact Zero food waste and things, you know.
So a lot of the events you're doing center around food waste, because that's one of the projects you're working with.
It's part of that. You know, my major job is like have Osteria Francescana that runs very well, because I always say that without Osteria Francescana, I could never do what we do everywhere. In Osteria Francescana is a Osteria Francescana is a laboratory of ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, is where we create culture. Is where we serve, emotions. And every day we have to feed 60 meals at lunch and 60 meals of dinner. But also we have to feed 30 guests at lunch and dinner. So they're like almost double, you know, the food that we have to serve at our refettorio, no? I call refettorio because it's a staff meal, mm-hmm. but a refettorio as a family, no? Meal. And so we are very careful on not waste anything. And what we do, we learn how to imagine, you know, recipes with all the scraps and the things that is left over from the food that we prepare for our guests. And it's a very important, creative process for the people that are going to cook staff meal. Mm. So that's how we start this whole reflection about waste zero, and imagine, an overripe tomato, some, broiled zucchini or breadcrumbs that always is left in the restaurant. There's a lot of bread that is left in the restaurant. What you can do with that, you know? So that's how we imagine the future, you know?
So at the end of this festival tonight, there's a dinner where all the food waste that would have been food waste is going
to
go...
But I have to say something.
Yes.
You know, I think we have to stop to call it food waste. But I just have to... I want to imagine that it's just an ordinary ingredient, you know? If you have an overripe tomato, you're going to use it as a sauce, you know, for some pasta maybe. Mm. But if you have a normal tomato, like very ripe or green, you're going to use it in a salad. If you have a small tomato and cherry tomato, you're going to use in a different preparation. So it depends what you have in your mind. For Mexicans, a brown banana is the moment in which you're going to use the banana. For European and Western world, you eat banana when it's yellow. So it's like it's just a way of a different perspective of what you how you see the and how you look at the food, you know.
How do you think we should start to talk about it in a different way if we want to get away from the conversation being about waste?
I think first of all, we have to buy different, you know. We have to dedicate half an hour every couple of days to ourselves, to our family, to shop. Mm-hmm. To shop seasonal food, and you're going to spend less, and you're going to eat better. And you're going to buy not like for 1 month. So you're going to storage in a freezer and, you know, you have tons of food, you know. And but you have to buy the right amount for a couple of days, you know, and you're going to cook that food, you know, that maybe the cheesemaker, maybe the bakery they suggested to buy, you know, maybe the farmers, or, you know, they suggest that kind of corn or that tomato or that, you know, zucchini, or that cut of meat or that fish that is sustainable. A sardine is much better than a farm-raised lobster, or, you know, some Parmigiano Reggiano crust is better than, you know, some mediocre caviar. So that's the point of view, you know. We need knowledge. We need the chefs that they're going to tell you. And that's why bread is gold. Or that's why we did the book. The chefs, they're gonna make visible the invisible, you know.
So make visible the invisible. That's a big part of your organization,
exactly.
Food for Soul. Can you explain what that means?
That means, you know, for us it's normal, you know, to have, you know, we have knowledge, we have creativity, we are into this kind of process of using and ask questions to the ingredients, you know, and we can really give you suggestion of what to do with 3 days old bread or with some you know, brown bananas. You know, in the bread is gold, you can see these Brazilian chefs. They're using banana peels and they make chutney, and they you can use that chutney with banana peels to serve some cheese close to the cheese. Or we made pesto, for example, like for pasta, but we didn't have any pine nuts, and we used breadcrumbs instead of pine nuts, and the pesto came out creamy and light and beautiful, and you know, much more interesting than tradition. So we create also tradition in evolution. I remember Daniel Hamm from 11 Madison Park, you know, he had some zucchini, and in his idea, some bruised zucchini, you know, he sliced zucchini as a pasta, and he made lasagna with zucchini, you know, grilled zucchini, and it was fantastic. So that's what I mean for make visible the invisible.
So you were just talking about changing the way we think about shopping for food being a really big deal in kind of shifting the narrative around food and what food waste is or isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, do you speak to chefs in your restaurants differently than you would a normal eater, differently about how to prevent food waste?
No. They know naturally that I think like that, and they know that we don't want any waste in our restaurant. And you know, there is a section in which we prepare. We have you know, where the the food and the ingredients arrives. They prepare like the line for the main kitchen, and is where all the stagiaires, the commis, they are there, and they are like preparing for the staff meal. And, you know, it's a normal process, it's a normal practice that we do every day, as my grandmother was doing in our family, or my mom, you know. We were a big family, like we are in Osteria Francescana. Mm. And we are cooking exactly as my grandmother was cooking for us. So,
awesome. So I want to talk a little bit more about Food for Soul. And you recently opened a new project within that, right?
Yeah, in Paris.
Paris, right.
We just opened Paris. They gave us the crypt of the Church of La Madeleine. That is insane, you know. It was like, I couldn't believe it, you know, when they told me, you know, they want you to open in a crypt of the church? And I said, no, it's impossible. You know, but the crypt of the church or in Place de la Madeleine? No, no, in the church. You know, it's like, it's a dream, you know. And, you know, JR, we brought light to the crypt of the church. Can you imagine a crypt of the church like there since centuries and centuries, and no one even walk into the crypt? And, you know, it was full of dust and rats and, you know, and we clean everything, we restore everything. The artist did an amazing job, and we opened the 15th of March, and is more successful than ever, you know. They're like every night. Now the old board of La Madeleine, they're taking care of the church. They want us in the board. So now we are in the board of the church. So we are interacting with the priest and the archbishop directly because they love the project.
That's so interesting. So what's happening in that space? Who's eating there?
In Paris, most of them are refugees and migrants. Mm. So they're like, in Paris have a lot of, you know, they have, since ever, you know, they have a lot of North of African people
right.
in there. And especially in the last year, they've been invaded by these people. And, you know, they have a lot of problems with that. So, but to confront these kind of problems, you have to be inclusive. It's not, you cannot segregate in the periphery of Paris and, you know, hide them from everything as they did in Brazil. You know, in Brazil, when we arrived there, you know, like, to welcome people, there are so many slugs and, you know, people living on the street, they build walls to cover those slugs, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, it's not the way you have to act, you know. You have to include these people, and they are part of our society. And, you know, I think in Paris, we did something extremely important because it's an example. And as an example, you know, these people, they start asking to be part of this project, and they start, you know, acting as they are part of this project, helping us to set up tables, to help in the kitchen. You know, it's like, it's very inclusive project, mm-hmm. you know.
So a lot of your work does center around, like, hospitality, inclusion, and things like that. And I was wondering, we were talking to Mitchell Davis yesterday
yeah.
about a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of chefs kind of in the U.S. falling on both sides of the argument on
yeah.
if someone comes into your restaurant that you don't
yeah.
agree with,
yeah.
how do you handle that? What are your thoughts on that?
To me, actually, it never happened. So I don't know how I will act. So it's not a problem, you know. There's mm-hmm. like, I'm open to persuasion. So mm-hmm. if they have a better idea, please. Tell me what is your better idea, and maybe I can change my mind, you know. Mm. I'm always open, you know. Mm. I'm not a closed person, you know.
Yeah.
We always keep door open in which we can walk in and imagine a crazy project, you know. Mm. We are like doing in September with a group of mom and, you know, a few grandmothers. We are like Lara and my wife and Erica Fontana, another woman. You know, they are like, we are building a new kitchen with a laboratory for, you know, special kids. You know, they're gonna learn how to make tortellini, and they're gonna sell to the public, and they're gonna be part of the society, making some money. So. Mm. It's like this, you know. It's like I live in a place, Emilia Romagna, that is very social. You know, we learn since decades that be together, we can have a louder voice. So, this is something that I believe. So,
On that note, I read an article in the Telegraph, I believe, recently, where you were quoted saying that women
I said
have had...
so many things that don't even...
well, it, no, it was a great thing. It was that women have had like such a positive impact on your life.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, if I think about my life, I think about, first of all, my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother convinced me to keep studying and not to play soccer. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in front of... I was good on playing soccer, and I had to decide if I had to play as a professionist or keep studying. Mm-hmm. You know, and my grandmother convinced me to study. My mom was like the one who confronted my father, because I was studying as a law school, and my mom convinced my father that it wasn't the right thing, you know, to do for me, because I, you know, do you see me as a lawyer? You know, no, you know. And can I have some chocolate, please?
Someone get Massimo more chocolate.
I think this is a different one. What is this?
This one is from the Dominican Republic.
Good, Dominican Republic. I love Dominican Republic. And, she said, please let him do whatever he wants. And, if he's happy to be a chef, just let him do. And he was like very unhappy. And he was confronting my mother, say that she was spoiling me. And she was always on my side. And so maybe I kept going, you know, and believe in what I was doing just to show my father that my mom was right, you know? And then I met Lara, my wife, that she made visible the invisible, you know, on contemporary art, you know? I thought contemporary art was over after Duchamp, but she said, please, just look at contemporary art and what the artist is saying, you know? On the wall, there are ideas, and you can really look deep into those things, and you know, and see the world in a different way, different perspective, maybe a perspective of a child that look at the world from under the table. Picasso was saying, I was 13 and I was drawing as Raffaello, but it took the whole life to paint like a child. You know, so that's the point. You know, when you see the world from a different perspective, maybe you can transfer emotion, maybe making a mistake, you know, as a child. You
Is
know?
There a parallel between this contemporary art and
I'm
food?
I'm chewing the chocolate now. Please.
Yeah, is there some parallel here between the contemporary art and food, the way that you cook food?
Wait a second.
It's chocolate break, guys.
Very interesting.
We're having a... Well, what are your thoughts on the chocolate, Massimo?
No, I have such a intense acidity in the back palate. But the palate is very clean, so that means the chocolate is made very well.
Oh,
and the fermentation was extremely good.
Whose chocolate is this, by the way?
Puerto Rico.
Amano. Amano chocolate, shout out.
That's very good. So, yes, there is. You know, I always thought that cooking... we are artisans. The artist is an artist for one simple reason. Because the artist is free to do whatever he wants. An artisan like me, we have to cook good food. An engineer who builds Ferrari, you know, they have to build fast cars. So that's the reason, you know. There is a word in Latin called artiere. Artiere is in the middle between artisan and artist. Is an artisan obsessed about the quality. So I think we are artieri. We are artisan, but we have the obsession about the quality. Quality of the ideas, quality of the product, quality of the vision of life. So that's what we are, I think, you know. But sometimes... For some expression, we can really be compared to artists, because with my plate like my recipe, Oops, I Dropped the Lemon Tart, in which I express the imperfection rebuilt in a perfect way. I think it's very close to artists and inspire Lisa Coley Gallery in New York to open a group show called I Dropped the Lemon Tart, in which the artists, they were interpret the imperfection. So it's a very thin line in which, you know, people think, oh, you are a genius. People think you are totally nuts, you know. So that's the point.
I also wanted to ask you about an upcoming project in London where you'll be doing a guest chef pop-up.
I'm learning from you now.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're hearing it here first.
Wait a second. Lara, do we have a problem? Do we have a project? She said no.
Lara said no, so there's no
Lara
project.
Said no, so...
Fake news. Okay, so I want to...
But what was the news?
Let me look it up. It was a pop-up in London. Conduit. To be the first guest chef at Merlin LeBron Johnson's all-new Conduit restaurant in Mayfair this September. September's far away, though.
Good news. Are they paying us?
I don't know. Someone's going to have to check that.
I hope so.
Well, Massimo, let's talk about the Chef Leadership Summit that you were at last night.
Yeah.
You were in a talk with Mitchell Davis.
Yep.
And was it Alon Chaya?
What?
The other chef that was talking with you
Rick.
Guys?
Was Rick.
Rick Bayless.
Yeah.
How did that event go? What was the conversation?
Was a good conversation.
Yeah.
It was very good.
Any
With Mitchell is always you know, you can go everywhere, you know, because he's like, he's such a brilliant mind. He takes you everywhere, you know. And but I think it was a good conversation because it was very open, very, you know, deep, and but very informal, you know. It's not like, ooh, you know, you feel the pressure, and, you know, I'm like, we are very natural, you know, what we do. We arrive at being 3-star Michelin in a very small kitchen with, you know, a very family team that we treat as a family. And we arrive there very slow. We grow very slow. I believe in growing slow as a tree, you know. I always remember, you know, my father-in-law, Mr. Gilmore, you know, he was always saying, you know, grow slow like a tree with big roots. If the first storm, you don't wash away. That's the point, you know. When you grow slow and you arrive at there, you know, you're mature and you know how to act, you know, you feel comfortable in every situation, you know.
It's a good place to stop with being at Slow Food and growing slow. And making really great, thoughtful decisions about everything that we do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, Massimo, thank you so much for joining us
and talking to us
about all the events you're
doing. Thank you very much. Thank you to invite me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will be right back with more interviews at Slow Food Nations. Please stay tuned. And thanks again to our sponsors, Hearst Ranch Beef, the Julia Child Foundation, and our friend Julie Schaefer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.